Accession number 9168, rule number 1.
Mr. Amat, reel 1. Can you tell me when you were born, Mr. Amat?
Yes, I was born on the 10th of April, 1898, at Lansdowne Road, Dalston, Hackney, London. The room I was born in was part of a flat over the workshop where my father worked. And the name of the firm was George Sindel and Son. I used to make fancy train and silk cord and girdles for the trade.
How many were there in your family?
There was mother and father and a sister and a brother. I also had an elder brother, but he died when he was still very young. So there were three children left. My sister was the oldest, by a year older than me, and my brother was 2 years younger than me.
And your father was self-employed?
Well, no, he was a foreman of this factory, and they used to make all these silk cords. He came down from Derby when he was 19 years of age and started working for this George Sindel and making these silk cords in what was called in those days the Derby spinner, whereas all the other people employed in the factory were what were called London twisters. And they all made the same, more or less the same thing. And all the silk we used was real China silk. And as soon as you touched it, it all clung to your fingers, which you don't see now. That is real silk.
Can you tell me something about some more about your childhood?
About what?
Your childhood.
Yeah. I don't remember much of my life in place, the fat where I was born, but my family moved to Middleton Road, which was in the same area, with my grandparents. My grandfather was a builder and decorator. He used to run his own business. And we had a three-story house. And we used to have a kitchen in the basement. And a sitting room and dining room on the first floor, and bedrooms up above. I don't remember much about it. The only thing is that we must have been pretty well off, because we had a grand piano, and the upper floors were all carpet laid. And we had, it was about an 8-piece upholstered suite in the what was called a sitting room in those days, and there was large folding doors dividing the dining room from the sitting room. So we stopped there until I was 4, I suppose, and then our fortunes changed and we were more or less down and out. The grand piano was loaded onto a van. All the best furniture we had gone, and the carpets, and we moved into an old barracks that used to be used by the militia. In those days, there was a militia in every town. They were sort of part-time soldiers that used to be kept to keep the peace before the real police force got into sway. And this was one of their places that was evacuated. And then from there we moved to the house in just off Graham Road. But we didn't stop there long, and eventually we arrived at Walthamstow, where I spent the rest of my school days and my early life. This was a much better house, and we appear to be much better off. And It was quite close to Epping Forest. As a matter of fact, we used to just cross the road, and we were in fields and on a farm. And we'd get right across them. I spent most of my time, during the time I was at school, out in the open, in Epping Forest and all around them.
What brought about the change in family fortunes that you mentioned?
Hmm?
Why was there a change in the family's fortunes?
Well, the job my father had, all that sort of trade, used to fluctuate. And you had what they call slack periods. And in those days, there was no unemployment pay, nothing like that at all. So if you didn't work, you didn't eat. That's all it amounted to. So this was one of those slack periods, you see. That's why the only way you could sort of carry on was to get rid of all your worldly goods and to live day by day, you see.
Whereabouts did you go to school?
I went to Wood Street Court School, and that was run in those days by Essex County Council, as it's now all comes under the LCC, I believe, because it's a London district. But in those days, it was an Essex County school. And first of all, I went into the junior school, which was a corrugated iron annex to the real school. And you stopped there until you were a certain age before you went into the boys' school. And the boys' school was a one-storey place with, I don't remember whether they were brick floors, wooden floors or concrete. I think most of them were concrete. And I had quite an enjoyable school life. And afterwards, I managed to reach the top class or form, class it was called in those days, Standard 7. And our teacher was a Mr. Sims, who was a great physical exercise advocate and swimmer. Then he used to take us in all sorts of activities outside, you see, which was rather good for me in later life.
Did you enjoy your schooling?
Oh yes, mostly. There was one particular teacher we never liked, and he was Irish. McCarthy, his name was, and he had a habit of walking round the class as we were set any job to do, any writing to do, or arithmetic, and anything like that, and leaning over your shoulder and tapping you with a ruler if you were making mistakes or all that sort of thing. But apart from that, I had a pretty good life. I made one or two real good friends that I used to keep with for years, even after we left school. We used to do a lot of walking in those days, being near the forest, and even when I started work on a Sunday morning and Sunday evening, we'd walk miles through Epping Forest and take perhaps some sandwiches or something like that and spend all day. There's one particular spot that we used to almost congregate, and that was called Hollow Ponds. And that was a place near Whips Cross where the council was beginning to make a recreation area with a swimming pool and lake, a boating lake, and all the sand that was brought in to make hills and shady glens with trees and all that, because us school children used to have the time of our life there. I remember I used to like going out on the skiffs that they had at the boating house and rowing round the lake. I think I used to charge sixpence an hour for this particular enjoyment.
Did you have to help your parents at work at all?
Big one.
Did you have to help your parents at work?
Oh, yes, at work, yes. Actually, that was one of the worst times of my life at work, because we used to we lived about 4.5 miles away from where I worked at in Dalston. That was in Albert Road, where the factory was. And I had to walk to the station, 10 minutes walk, catch a train. It took another 10 minutes, and then walk from the station to the factory, which was another 10 minutes, quarter of an hour's walk. And we used to start at 8 o'clock, have an hour for lunch, and work till 7 in the evening. And then, of course, I had the journey back every night as well. And we used to work 5.5 days a week. Saturday morning, we'd go in at 8 and leave at 1. And just before you left at 1, that's when you got paid. So they made sure you do that all your work before you left. And it was long hours and tiring work, because when I first went there, all the boys were the same who went there as sort of apprentices. There was what they called wheels, and they were a large wheel mounted on a stem at either end of a long 30-yard run, which was called the shop. And they're all the cotton and silk and all the stuff we used to use to make these cords was strung out along them and covered with either silk or wool or something like that, you see. And our job as boys was to turn these wheels all day long while the men walked up and down and covered the cotton and all that with all this various other stuff. And then after this was, these lengths, what we call them, used to be put up in crosses, and sort of mixed together two or three strands, and then you had to take them down and coil them all up and take them up to the warehouse to be boxed up and sent away to, you know, London City. Yeah, it's quite another early job we used to do, when the last boy who came there, he had all the jobs of going around every morning about 10 o'clock to all the men and the women in the factory, and asked them if what they wanted in the shop at the end of the road. And there was a pub at the end of the road called the Padgett Arms, and us boys, when it was their turn, used to get a broomstick with nails in it, and all the beer cans strung along it. And these used to be taken up to the pub, and the various cans were filled up and taken back, and also sandwiches were got from one of the grocers. That was their job every day, the last one who joined the firm. And woe betide anybody who came back with the wrong order.
How old were you when you started work?
14. 14 and one day.
How did you get the job?
Well, my father was a foreman there, you see, and it was recognised in those days that you more or less followed your father, especially if you had a job like that, you see. And so that was it. I left school on Friday, and on Monday I started work. And first of all, I had to go to the local doctor to be examined. They had to do that. Even in those days, that was a factory act, to make sure that I was fit enough to do the job, you see. We never used to get any holidays as such as you get them now. The only holiday you had was the public holiday, the bank holiday, like August bank holiday, Christmas, and Boxing Day you worked half a day. And Easter you got half a day for Good Friday and the full day for the Monday, Easter Monday. But otherwise you never got any holiday at all. If you wanted a holiday, you had to lose the pay. The holiday I had while I was working there before the war was a friend of mine and I went to Ramsgate. We went to, and we had just a weekend, that's all. We left on a Friday, I think it was a Friday. Went to the Swan Pier near Tower Bridge and caught the Royal Sovereign. That was a paddle steamer. It took us up the Thames. We stopped at Southend Pier on the road, and then went to Margate and Ramsgate and got off at Ramsgate. Spent the weekend there. We came back the same way. I think that cost £5, something like that.
How much were you paid?
My first pay was 5 shillings a week. And out of that, I had to spend 18 pence train fare. But when I left to join the army, I was getting 13 shillings a week.
What did you do with the rest of your money after you'd paid for your train fares and your lunches?
Well, I gave all of it, borrowing sixpence, to my mother. And I remember my father in those days, I know he used to, his wage was 2 guineas a week, and he was one of the highest paid people in the factory. Nearly all the other men only got about 30 shillings or 32 shillings a week. Because us boys, I got more than the other boys, because being my father was a foreman, they only get 4 shillings a week. But then, of course, most of them live locally, so they didn't have any fare, you see.
Were you given any training?
Big one?
Were you given training for a trade?
This was the trade, you see. So called spinner. That's what I was registered as afterwards, when I joined the army, you see. But that's all sort of gone now. Nobody knows anything about that sort of thing now.
And were you working at this firm when war broke out?
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I remember the Christmas of 1914, we had a bit of a party, and my aunt and uncle and my cousin, Frank, and his sister, and his two sisters came, and we spent a Christmas there, and that was the first time I'd had a smoke, and I was 16 and 8 months then, and of course the war had gone on, you see, it started in August, and I'd read the papers and all that, and I was always interested in soldiers and all that, and so I decided then and there that I was, sooner or later, I was going to join the army. So after Christmas was over, on the Monday, after I'd finished work, instead of going to the normal station where I got out, I got out a station before, went to the drill hall and joined up the 7th Battalion of the Essex Regiment, Territorial Army.
What had been your feelings when you heard that war had been declared back in August?
Well, I was anxious to sort of join the rest of them, although, of course, being too young, but I used to read everything I could about the war and, you know, how it was being conducted and all that. Yes, but anyway, I joined up, and they took my measurements and all that, and they sent me down with another half a dozen young men to the local doctor's to be examined, and then these documents were taken back, and we were marched into an office where there was I suppose he must have been a major. I didn't know at the time what rank he was, but he was an officer. And there we were all sworn in to, you know, serve His Majesty and all that sort of thing, and giving a king's shilling. And that was how I joined. From then on, I was a soldier.
Did you lie about your age?
Yes. Yes, I was only 17. So I'd learnt from some of the people I used to associate with, if you put your age on, even if they found out your date, you could say, oh, you made a mistake. So I put a year on my age. You were allowed to join the Territorial Army in those days when you were 17, you see. But I was only 16 and 8 months, so I said I was born in 1897. And anyway, I never heard no more about that until much later, when something cropped up and this came to the front then.
What was your parents' reaction when you told them you'd enlisted?
Well, they knew I was rather one of those who used to go out and do things all on my own without asking anybody's permission. So I don't think they were too worried about, because they knew that whatever happened, they couldn't alter it, because once you'd signed on as a soldier, yeah, that's what you were. Anyway, I spent quite a happy fortnight there. We were just drilling and taking breaks, and I learnt the art of going to the canteen and buying a tea and bun, which all soldiers used to learn early in those days, which was quite new. We never had anything like that before, not at work or anything like that. We went on a couple of route marches. We're all in civvies. There was no uniform issued. But on the last few days of the fortnight we spent there, we got our uniform issued. We had khaki uniform that was addicted in those days to each regiment. They had their own particular uniform. And ours was red piping down the seams of the trousers and red piping on the pockets, red piping on the epaulets. And a tunic with two breast pockets, no lower pockets, a pair of trousers and a great coat and a hat. That's all we had. All the rest we had to find ourselves. All our shirts and underclothes and socks and boots, all had to find ourselves, you see. That was what it was in those days in the Territorial Army, you see. Anyway, I think it was the 16th of January, before we were told on the Friday, or the Saturday rather, to get ready to be moved out on the Monday, and we had to assemble and they marched us to the station. And we got on a train and landed up in a little town called Stampton in Lincolnshire. And I spent the first 6 months of my soldier in there. The thing I remember about was the fact that although we had just our uniform, we used to march to a place called Burley Park, which is about 2 miles outside Stampton, do our training. And on warm days we used to roll our overcoats up from the bottom after we'd undone all the buttons and made what they call a banderole. This was carried over the shoulder, and it's about 4 months I think before we got any equipment. And then we got a mixture of leather and webbing equipment, which was a lot of the regiments, TA units, used to wear, but of course the regulars in those days had the traditional webbing equipment, which hadn't been issued to us yet. And we had, about a week after we got our equipment, we were issued with Japanese rifles. We hadn't got sufficient of the old Lee Enfield, so they got these from Japan, who was in those days an ally of the Western, you know, France and England. These were unique in the fact that they had a left-hand twist of the bore, which was opposite to ours, and also had a safety catch, which was near the end of the bolt, which used to scratch your hand every time you used to slope arms and all that sort of thing. Anyway, we fired a course at Grantham there while I was training, and then an order came out asking for volunteers for Imperial service. That meant that, because in those days, the Territorial Army was just a home-based army. They weren't allowed to be sent abroad unless there was an Act of Parliament passed. But you could volunteer for Imperial service, which was service in India and Australia or Canada or one of the colonies, without going to a war front, you see. Well, I asked for volunteers, and most of the younger element, including me, went up and signed on for Imperial service, and they gave us a silver badge with Imperial service written across it. And then we were separated from the rest of the battalion, who were all home base people. There was only about 40 or 50 of us, that's all, the whole 600 or 700 volunteered, all the rest didn't want to know, especially after they the news coming through from the front, you see, and all that, all those casualties and terrible times. Anyway, really, a lot of these youngsters, well, they were youngsters with me, were about the same age as me, and most part of them were underage. Anyway, went from there to, in June, to a place called Thetford in Norfolk. We went under canvas, and the whole brigade of the Essex Regiment TA went there. The people were the same as us, volunteered, and there was the 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th Battalion of the Essex Regiment there. But we were the smallest contingent of the lot. The 6th Battalion, they had 200 or 300 of their people volunteered, and they were the biggest contingent there. Alongside us was, always remember these, the Lovett Scouts. They were a Scottish regiment, mounted. And one thing about them, I remember, is in those days at camp, every activity of a soldier was governed by the bugle call. And we learnt our own bugle calls, but these people there used to use the bagpipes, and of course we soon began to learn their calls as well.
When you volunteered for Imperial service, what did you expect?
When I what?
When you volunteered for Imperial service.
Well, we expected to see some action and go abroad, because we were reading about all the other chaps who were serving, you know, out in France and Italy, and also in when they made the expedition to Gallipoli. And we wanted to sort of get away from the routine, the grinding routine as it was. We sort of more or less training all the time and get a boring existence, you see. And the officers never used to take any active interest in the troops like they do now, or have done since. And you were sort of, after your parade was finished or your duty, you left on your own. And as you only had, I think I used to draw about 3 and 6 pence a week pay, your activities were limited, you think.